Blog Talk Radio.
Sounds of the Living Water Radio Show. Sounds of the Living Water. Sounds of the Living Water. Sounds of the Living Water Radio Show.
We teach the Bible from Genesis to Revelation. Preach the gospel unto the scattered nations. So many people are lost, it's time to be awakened. Come out of this world, it's ran by Satan. Through the Most High's laws, flee from things pagan. Understanding the word of Yah is really breathtaking. Under His love, we're covering it so amazing. Thank you each day, so now let's praise Him. Do things in unity, you and me. You wanna know what we're talking about? Come and see. It's time to be deeply rooted up like a tree. You want the truth, it will set you free.
Sounds of the Living Water. Sounds of the Living Water, Sounds of the Living Water Radio Show. Sounds of the Living Water, Sounds of the Living Water, Sounds of the Living Water Radio Show. Sounds of the Living Water, Sounds of the Living Water, Sounds of the Living Water Radio Show. Sounds of the Living Water, Sounds of the Living Water. Sounds of the Living Water Radio Show.
Shalom, shalom, grace and peace, everyone. Hallelujah. Welcome to another episode of the Sounds of Living Waters. Job Israel, the Commonwealth of Israel. And today, we're here with Brother Rob Christensen with the Visible Spirits and Invisible Secrets, Invisible Powers. And we're dealing with a really touchy subject here. And it's dealing with the church body. And got to be careful about these things because, you know, what about the church and what about, you know, how is it moving as far as moving people toward those things that are based on facts and religion? I could say religion, but based on facts of the scriptures. And we're dealing with a pastor himself, Chuck Baldwin. We're going to be looking at some of his work in this matter. It seems to be very interesting. So how about this? How about we just turn it over to Rob Christensen and he will enlighten us and give us a better understanding of this reality check. So why is nonprofits failing? Why nonprofits fail? So with that being said, Rob Christensen,
Hello.
Hey, there you go. All right. Hey, grace and peace in Jesus. Hallelujah.
Grace and peace. Okay, I've got my phone on a pedestal, so I won't touch it. I should have better. Should have a better sound. Anyways, this, as in previous the blog that I had, I talked about, you know, more in an academic way, you know, defining what reality is all about, but the less traveled road. In other words, reality can be a very painful thing, a very painful process, where people in their journey of life, they kind of make a map of how they view things, and it may be very sketchy, but the more detailed, the more you have a grasp of facts, the more, you know, the more you have pursued truth, then you have reality. And when we don't have reality, well, we're really missing something in our lives. We're, you know, the moral implications, the just the quality of living. So I talked about 9/11, for example, how that's a very grim reality, and yet it goes unchecked for a large chunk of the population. A good example was just yesterday. In my personal relationship with my sister-in-law, they lived with us for a couple of years. I know them very well. She's an academician. She teaches at a local university, Spanish and so forth. So she's really done well for herself with a master's degree. She has an international perspective, coming from a South American country like my wife does. So having immigrated into this country legally, they've faced a lot of harsh realities of what they thought America was. Seeing things on TV and then coming to this country and finding, well, it's not quite the dream place where everybody just kind of accepts you. There's a lot of prejudice and things that they were exposed to. I remember how my wife talked about some of the Asian people in Minnesota where they were just in good shape. There was a lot of money behind them and very little money for, you know, my wife and her sister as they were in this new country with a different weather climate, cold, and so some major changes. So anyways, in our conversation, I talked about my journey in life, how it was so hard for me to think that I've seen good things about our federal government, like the Clean Water Act or the cleanup of hazardous waste, since I have an environmental background, and how great, you know, and how much hope seeing these changes gives me. And yet, I've always been a skeptic about our international power, how it just seems like there's always an enemy out there. And for some reason, we're supposed to, for us to be secure, we have to, you know, have our installations throughout the world. It's kind of the glue that holds things together. But when you look at the actions like the Vietnam War and onward, it always, my gut feeling was, something's terribly wrong. How can I pledge allegiance and know that, these extremely destructive actions are taking place? So, moving on to Chuck Baldwin, I really enjoyed this interview that Dane Wigington of geoengineeringwatch.org, held with Chuck. They found a lot of common ground. But one thing that did come up, and I asked this question to my sister-in-law, I said, what do you think? I'll call her Susan because that's not a name. What do you think, Susan? What do you think of 9/11? You know, we understand that the government and the elite have kind of taken over the world, that it's kind of a sham government that we live in, where people, like in mainstream media, you venture to a certain point, and then whether it's the politicians, they're kind of the lapdogs, they're the watchdogs, where you can only go so far and you'll get pushed back. You know, you have to stay in that envelope. So when after about 9/11, I started with a fundamental physical fact of Building 7. That's where it's encouraged to start anybody with that conversation. Is how can a building collapse on its own footprint in 7 seconds, 47 stories, yet it's almost as tall as a football field, one of the most modern steel frame structures, as sturdy as architects and engineers could ever design. You know, how can that fall so fast? And, just to that, we had an engaging conversation. I didn't push it, but I was kind of shocked to think that, a fire could have done it. And, you know, I had explained the fact that you have to vaporize metal to have something that instantaneous where all four corners. So I understand, you know, it's been a long process for me to even look at the issue. So, you know, I'm satisfied to say you gently plant the seed with people. You start and you don't go into all the rabbit holes that I could go into in regard to 9/11. Just really put at the door, look, is it physically possible? Why would 3,000 best architects and engineers have gone for years gaining more information, more facts through Freedom of Information over years to have proof that, you know, the facts, the painful reality that, hey, you know, if a controlled demolition happened to Building 7, what does that mean? And go from there. Well, in the case of Seth Baldwin, he was a presidential candidate in 2008. He had been a supporter of the Constitutional Party with Ron Paul. And Ron Paul was forced out. He decided to drop out. He couldn't rally the support. He was going against an incredible force of the two-party system, the Republicans, Democrats. And so he endorsed Chuck Baldwin. So here's a little bit about Chuck, in that he was from the moral majority, the religious right. If you look back to like 1979 up on through the 80s, there was a lot of news about the moral majority, people like Pat Robertson. So he was affiliated with those people. And he had built a congregation over 35 years in the panhandle of Florida, and a very, very large church, many, many members who really liked him. And Chuck became active with the moral majority. I guess there's different words, the religious right, the moral majority, that definitely had a political activism, just as left, more of a leftist leaning progressive churches. But one thing he says right away, you know, all these churches are nonprofits. They are subject to certain rules to be a nonprofit and to receive, you know, the backing of tax exemption, so the members, you know, pay a lot less, you know, protection, and how important that is. So in looking at that, he said he used to just throw away the information about the tax exemption. It didn't mean much to him. But he found out through other pastors and members that, you know, they followed everything to the T. They took that paperwork. And what was sent in the mail is also interesting to note, that it was law firms that would send that information about the 501c3 status, that, you know, the guidelines to it. So it basically says what you can do as a minister and what you can't do, what the congregation can do and what the congregation can't do. And it goes pretty deep. But as Chuck went on with the Constitutional Party, you know, he found how he's up against such strong headwind that of the two-party system. And, you know, his commentary is, he says, how this day and age, we're totally lost. We're so divided. It's nothing but angst and anger and accusation, and, you know, you're one side or the other. And we've basically lost the principles of our Constitution. We used to have a much more principled government. So he's really put off by that. So in 2010, he formed another institution, and he formed it privately. It's called the Montana Liberty Fellowship. So after all those years in Florida, he came to a point where he faced the congregation and said, look, this took a lot of courage, because I suppose there's several million dollars involved here in this huge congregation. He said, I can no longer deal with a nonprofit, all these restrictions, so I'm going to go private. So he lost a lot of friends. Many, many people refused to be a part of his congregation. So that's where he moved to Montana and kind of started a new life. And his journey of reality is really interesting, because all those people from the religious right that he knew so well, as 9/11 happened, they were hook, line, and sinker in line with, you know, the common view that, you know, 9/11 is something we don't talk about. The backing of Israel, it's something that we just do. It's a theological thing that Chuck said he followed for 30 years, where Israel was part of prophecy, and, you know, we basically are glued to the hip with that country. And we appreciate who they are, what they do. And at one point in his life, he simply said, you know, for so long, I have not really looked into doctrine, to the facts of the government, their actions. But, you know, he had that gut feeling that it's time to look into the literature, the Bible itself. And does the reality of what I see on the current events with Israel, does it fit into the prophecy of the Bible, you know, the actual words? So it was a 2-year process where he really looked deep into his heart, into his soul, and to the Bible. Does this actually fit with what I'm seeing? And again, with the treatment of Palestinians, knowing that they're basically an imprisoned country, that weapons are being tested just on the population to gain more weaponry and more technology. You know, he started seeing just the moral implications of what Israel was a part of. And he also, at the time of 2016, with Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, his gut instinct about Donald Trump was that what he says, his rhetoric, I like. You know, he's anti-establishment, but his gut instinct said, you know, I don't really like the guy. But let's see what he can do, if he can do what he says. And I know, for example, Donald Trump said, yeah, we've got to stop this climate engineering, you know, and we'd have to replace all these politicians. We have to drain the swamp. I think everybody has heard that. And so as time went on, of course, to his dismay, he saw exactly the opposite happen, where Chuck became very aware of the Council on Foreign Relations, that being this large organization of secrecy, of think tanks, people that plan and do these actions that lead to such strife and misery throughout the world. He was seeing that in Trump's cabinet, they were all members of the CFR, no different than previous administrations. tied to this dark organization that, you know, as a front sounds fine, Council on Foreign Relations. But again, going all the way back to World War One and the inventor of the Council on Foreign Relations, it was Edward Bernays. Go all the way back to Woodrow Wilson. Here's this nice sounding humanitarian organization, but yet as one learns and looks into it, what it actually is, it's been an organization of secrecy, secret proceedings, secret meetings, the same thing that Kennedy warned about the week before he was assassinated. He told the press about how secrecy is something we can't have. We need a press that uncovers the reality of what our government's doing. And, you know, in the last 2 weeks, I've looked at, you know, the grim reality of Chelsea Manning and Julian Assange. And on the same token, it's just interesting to note how here were people that exposed the very most ugly, dark, evil truth about our government, which in effect is true journalism. That is the responsibility of the journalist. So, for example, with Manning's film of American forces in the air gunning down people and having a joyride doing it, and for example, you know, among the innocent that were being slaughtered, and, you know, how ugly could you get with actual murderers on the parts of the American forces? You know, just cold-blooded murder happening on film. And for example, there was a father and his child. They were trying to assist some of the injured people bleeding to death. They were shot down by our American troops. So the punishment, you know, the true patriot in this case is being punished, and the people that committed the cold-blooded murder are not even looked at. You know, they go scot-free. So it's deep and ugly truth of reality, but some people, such as Seth Baldwin, how he regrets how long it took him to realize, you know, how Israel, Great Britain, the United States, we're all tied at the hip when it comes to 9/11 and the ability to pull off such a stunt. It's something that when he interviewed Dane Wigington, you know, they connect the dots together and come to an agreement on this harsh reality of 9/11. So, again, it was 9/11 where Chuck says that's when America began this downward cycle away from fundamental principles, and the war on terror to rule the Middle East to gain tie together all these things ignored by the media, churches, talk shows. You know, Chuck was saying how he's noticed people getting kicked off of talk shows, this universal denial of 9/11. And the burgeoning police state, the red flag laws, the guilty are, you're guilty first before you're innocent. Chuck gave a real touching example. I don't have the specifics, but he said that, you know, often I've seen in politics where the right to bear arms, you know, it's a big issue with the moral majority or whoever, or more of the conservative people are often, you know, into gun protections and so forth. And how frightening it was, he said, where there was an incident where just because a relative told the government, the police, etc., that her uncle had guns, had a lot of guns in his house. Well, just because of this tip-off, the police came to this man's house and confronted him about all the guns that he had in his house. And the man, you know, was 60 years old, and probably was just getting up in the morning from bed, and he was angry. You know, he said, well, why are you confronting me about my guns? It's my right. Well, the police came to confiscate his guns, and he said, no way, you can't do that. And they got into an argument, and this man had absolutely no record. He's a fine standing citizen, and they killed him. You know, they outright killed him. So that's where this example after example after example, where you can see, you know, the direction that we've been heading as a country, and what are we going to do about it, other than, you know, being like Chuck, having the courage to speak out against it. It's hard to do. I'm sure it was hard to leave the nonprofit community in this case. And another example, I'm getting beyond Chuck Baldwin at the moment, but I just think it's interesting, whether it's Ron Paul or Tulsi Gabbard, there's commonality there. Here are two people that say our wars, you know, our permanent state of war, we have to stop it. We have to defund the military. We have to use a lot of that money that's making things worse. Instead, we could be using it for infrastructure and building our communities, supporting health and education and so forth, instead of being the world's cop. I think it's interesting where, you know, in both, it doesn't matter which party. And also, you know, the 2 years where one party's railed against Donald Trump, the Democratic Party, and yet they are on the same side. It doesn't matter which side you're on. They'll back the military aggression that's taking place, whether establishment Republicans and Democrats told the same line. You just can't go outside the envelope. You have to make democracy safe for America. And it kind of drives me crazy at times. I've talked about Extinction Rebellion quite a bit. I've been involved with them, and they are, of course, of nonprofit status. And I decided to take a look at YouTube and a study, a critique about Extinction Rebellion. In other words, this attractive idea, Extinction Rebellion, just the words itself, has really been a brand that's caught popular attention, like in Britain. Been very successful in getting people going. In the idea of direct action, where, you know, if we're not happy with what our government's doing, if we think they're violating the law, then we have to violate the law. We'll get on the streets and glue our hands to some kind of statue or some kind of institutional place or object. You know, so even though Extinction Rebellion has succeeded in spreading out, and the idea is that it's kind of loose, that, you know, there's less restriction, that attracted me personally, because maybe I can get a local group to have face the climate engineering issue, where they won't be so afraid of their funding. They won't back off in fear of exposing such an issue. But when you look at the leaders, first of all, there's the child, Greta Thunberg, and she's the centerpiece. She really is the centerpiece of the Extinction Rebellion movement, where they show her protesting all alone, away from school, at the steps of, the government institution, I suppose, in Britain. And, of course, gets on the media, and her ability to speak is outstanding. And you know, here's just this courageous little person speaking to adults, saying, shame on you, we need to panic. Are you not? Why are we not doing anything about saving our planet? It's really touching when you watch her. But at the same time, who are the founders? You know, what is their background? And one of the people, I have to kind of shuffle my paperwork a little bit to find her. Let's see her name. Well, I'll find it. But this, the woman who's been in charge, has a background where she's been involved with computer programming and very much deeply involved with kind of the idea of singularity or high tech. And that's where I put a real red flag to Extinction Rebellion. Because what I learned in this 12-minute video is that there's, to have nonprofits, it's a nice cover. They make things for the mass media acceptable. They've got a cause, and people get behind it, and they create this kind of brand or this positive outlook of change. I found her name. It's Gail Bradbrook. She's one of the principal founders, I'd say in the top three founders of the organization. And if you look at Gail Bradbrook, she's very much involved with 5G. And if you look at who backs up the nonprofit that she's been involved with, there's oil companies, energy companies, and there's this idea of a fourth generation, a fourth industrial revolution behind it. A little bit more about 5G is, if you look at many, many, many scientific studies on the possible health effects, not only on humans, but on creatures, especially insects, 5G is disastrous. 5G is also such that this, you know, microwave technology with like 1 millimeter bandwidth, you know, I'm not well studied, but I can say this much. There's such a thing as electrosmog out there. It can mess with our DNA. It can be used, 5G, for crowd control. And do we really want all these antennas installed all over the place? I mean, there's just an incredible amount unfolding that they're just making it palatable for us that, oh, this is the way to go. This will make jobs. This will be good for the environment. Well, wait a minute. This stuff incinerates insects because of that 1 millimeter wavelength. Insects will actually be microwaved. And our insect population worldwide is plummeting. You know, this is part of extinction. So we have a real contradiction here where nonprofits become, or a movement becomes hijacked by the companies that support the nonprofit. So that's the scary thing. And excuse me just a moment. Hi, I'm on the radio. So, now, will I stay with Extinction Rebellion? Yeah, there's a lot of good-hearted people there. But my first duty will be to remind them of the painful reality of this technology that, please, this is only putting hands in the power of the elite. Or putting power into the hands of the elite. And it's just going to continue the extinction process. This is just a cover. Again, the word hijack comes to mind. You know, the topic today is about nonprofits. That's what Chuck Baldwin faced. And nonprofits are so often a way to corral people and bring them right back into a system that is destroying this planet. So, what comes first, you know, money or the future? often as individuals, you know, we have this willful blindness, like my sister-in-law. Now, have I had that willful blindness? To some degree, sure. How many years has it been where I really looked into 9/11? And again, Chuck Baldwin, it took him 30 years to realize that he's 180 degrees in the wrong direction. But after 9/11, you know, and seeing the religious right support this militaristic grinding machine that's trashing the earth, you know, not change one iota. He lost a lot of friends, but at least he has his solace, his peace. That, you know, that also spread. So I think I'll pause a little bit here just to make sure my voice is being heard and if there's any questions. So, Brother Job, are you there?
Yes, sir. And you very loud and clear. Absolutely.
Good. I want to take a quick check on the time. And, okay.
Another I think you got about 40 minutes left.
Yeah, I might have to cut it a little bit short today. I've got spring lots to do. But,
okay.
I wanted to say a few things about Dean Higginson. It's almost like a cult. I listen to every radio program up and down. It's something I dread, and it's something I enjoy because he seems to have, like no other person I've ever known, this ability to connect the dots, taking philosophy, taking religion. I know, for example, Dane, in his younger days, he was very shrewd and obviously knew how to make wealth. That's why he has one of the largest solar homes or alternative energy homes where he was awarded decades ago. And he's younger than I am. He's in his 50s, I believe. But anyways, he's just this incredible means of connecting dots, knowing how to use the media and just combining philosophy. You know, he'll cite Greek philosophers, he'll cite religious figures, and great people. Like, well, here's one quick quote from Dane. James Baldwin. I learned a lot about James Baldwin, you know, from some other quotes, as he was a great, great civil rights leader. And he said this: not everything that is faith can be changed, but nothing can be changed until it is faith. Well, how true is that? You know, climate engineering, I look at the lines in the sky and I think, how are we going to stop this? You know, people just will shrug their shoulders if I talk to them and so on and so forth. And it's just easier to go fishing, for example. And just, you know, I wish I could forget about it. But what of the future? What for my kids? Here, now that I've learned this painful truth, that it's one of the most destructive things, that it's a global weapon on nature. It is at war with nature, more extreme than any technology we've ever had, short of nuclear catastrophe. So, as much of a threat as Fukushima and nuclear catastrophe, this is a greater threat in many ways, because as they double down, nothing's happening. What are people doing? With nuclear weapons, at least humanity came to their senses and said, you know, we have to have treaties. We have to have remove the weapons. We have to denuclearize, whatever the word is, we have to tone down, which we have. But this one just keeps going. And as I stated, you know, the blizzard that we just went through in April, so there's measurements of the snow. There's all kinds of facts that say we may not make weather, but we can manipulate. We can take moisture and move it. We can ice nucleate that moisture and drop the temperature 20 degrees. You know, how awful is that? My coworker Chang, he showed me a photo of that same blizzard that I talked about that put my life in peril. He showed me cattle in South Dakota. All you could see was the face of this cattle in a hole. It was buried in a drift so deep, and they were rescuing this poor creature. It was almost like it was inside an igloo. They had to dig him out of the snow. That's how much snow they got. You know, this bizarre weather whiplash. Again, it's a distraction. We're just fighting for survival. We're not looking at the culprit. So, you know, it's real interesting. But there was an article that I'll kind of read by Dr. Paul Craig Roberts. Dane Wigington has cited this man several times. Paul Craig Roberts was a former Reagan cabinet member, and he writes prolifically about current events. So I'll share a little bit. He was talking about the Assange Manning cases, where he says, Assange Manning cases discredit humanity. Heavy weight. Millions of people maimed, orphaned, and displaced by gratuitous USA military aggression is a holocaust of death based entirely on lies and false accusations in order to advance secret American and Israeli agendas. Suspects that have a heavy burden for mass murder and destruction in our name is the reason most Americans prefer the fake news fed to them. American exceptionalism and how hard our government works to protect the storyline converts the illegal, brutal war crimes of the U.S. against women, children, defenseless citizens, wedding parties, funerals, and farmers in the field into glorious, brave defenses of liberty and virtue. And so he says, if you want truth, watch the video leaked by Manning of U.S. troops enjoying themselves while from the air gunning down reporters and innocent civilians walking along. I mentioned this at the beginning of the opening, you know, of this, my blog today. But, you know, again, I go back to Seth Baldwin, where he did an article, I think, listed by Paul Craig Roberts about, he said something to the effect, how Trump blew it, where, you know, Seth Baldwin trusted that, okay, I'll vote for this guy. I have my doubts, but if he's got no political record, but let's see what he does. And then, of course, you know, almost immediately he finds out instead of draining the swamp, he puts more people in the cabinet than Obama did that are from the Council on Foreign Relations. It's kind of interesting. But anyway, to go on here about this ugly scene that Manning was punished for, that this is the reason why Manning was the true picture of why he was tortured and imprisoned. And again, he keeps getting thrown in prison because lately he wouldn't cooperate with the Assange trial. And as I'm reminded, too, on the news, now things have changed. They want Assange for espionage, but never in history. And Rachel Maddow herself, who is part of this often fake news, said, as much as I don't like Assange, he was indirectly involved. Never in history has anybody been accused of Assange, been accused of espionage when they didn't even do it. You know, he was a second party. So never in history has a second party been put up for trial on espionage. and that there were like 17 counts of espionage, and that was in recent news. But so no finger pointing when the pinnacle of corporations exists here, and assuming most deaths, we deserve our fate, and the planet goes down in flames. You know, sometimes out of frustration, Bane will say, you know, the way we're headed, we will go down in flames unless we change our behavior fairly quickly. You know, in other words, if the American public is able to condone what they've done in through the freedom of press, where journalism is responsible to keep an open window and accountability to what our government is doing. You know, again, if they're not doing it and people willingly follow this path that is unreality, doesn't lead to reality, it's not factual, you know, they're going down the tubes. But it's hard to be so negative. I'm trying to think of some positive things here, and I've got one. This is great. And Dane Wigington's news, he said, and again, I wish we'd get this in the United States in the front pages, but Saudi Arabia, you know, we know that government will hang people and just do awful things in public to people without, you know, principle, without a proper trial, hang people, display them on the street, and so forth. You wonder how we can have relations with this government. So there was dock workers in Italy. Their job was to load weapons into a ship that would be transported to Saudi Arabia. And they being, you know, of moral courage, they did not load that ship. The dock workers stood down and said, we will not load this ship. So, you know, I got to say something positive. That is great news. You know, there's spot fires of awareness out there. There's spot fires of courage that bring about this awareness that these evil, weak shadow figures, these public figures, who lie through their teeth, but who are yet so often venerated after they die, like the, you know, the Father Bush, they can be defeated. They, you know, we don't have to cower to power. Anyways, I think I'll wrap things up pretty quick here. But again, Americans must choose a different fate to wake up, to face reality, to abandon ideology, preconception, and bias, to face the cold, hard reality of what government has done, is doing around the globe. And take John Kerouac, who exposed the illegal torture program, where it is it's a moral outrage. You know, he had the courage to expose that. Again, John Kerouac, in line with people like Chelsea Manage and Julian Assange. And I got to be honest, I was, you know, my reality at the time of the Clinton campaign was, well, it's either Trump or Clinton. I'll support Clinton. I know former Secretary Clinton, presidential candidate, is all-out support of Israel. I remember my wife and myself kind of booing. She made a speech to the AIPAC, or, you know, that powerful lobby. But it's just interesting where, you know, in my own reality, I've just learned more and more about the Clintons, and it's been deeply disturbing, just as it was for Chuck Baldwin, deeply disturbing that for 30 years. It took him a long time to realize that Israel, and at least what the government actions are, 180 degrees opposite of what the Bible and Christian principles would lead us to. So with that, there's not much more I can say. There another thing Dane brought out was Zbigniew Brzezinski's words, and I don't have them at hand, but basically it's interesting how Brzezinski himself said that, you know, my job is to dupe the people of the United States, you know, so to control them. He says it in many different ways, and unfortunately I don't have the script with me, but he did mention the weather, that indeed in the weather in the future we will be handling the weather to do whatever we want with it as a weapon, as a tool. So you have to wonder about these venerated leaders, whether it's a trilateral commission, or as Chuck Baldwin said, these CFR members, also Bilderberger members. You know, one listens to alternative radio and you hear about the Bilderbergers and the meetings, you know, the secret meetings that it's worth finding out about, just, you know, the dangers they entail. One more thing and I'll close. But for some reason, I devoted a little time to the Illuminati. That's just a kind of a catchy phrase. What is it? You know, it's asked as the evil, an evil power and force. Well, interestingly, George Washington was a Masonic leader. And in his many writings and diaries, he does write about the Illuminati. Indeed, he said they are infiltrating in the United States and they are an extreme danger. You know, this is factual information. And, you know, one goes on YouTube and you or Google and you find all these associated websites or video clips. So it's hard to stop sometimes going down the rabbit hole, but a military wife in Norfolk, Virginia, her family, 8 generations of military people, of Scottish background, but this woman had very strong Christian standards as far as what this country means and the principles we have to defend. She married this man who was also a high military top brass, who was, you know, jobs in Israel and secret operations and so forth. So she was deeply exposed to how the military functions at the highest levels. And she's listed, you know, on the clip as an Illuminati wife. But, you know, she said her husband would open up to her because he was an alcoholic. So for 11 years they were married. And she was always deeply disturbed by the people he hung out with and what she found out, that she's very intelligent, very educated, and very much trying to get peace, trying to find ways as a military wife, you know, we can stop wars and so forth. So she would dig in things. She went into the embassy in Israel and was trying to find out about the Palestinians, and she said there was nothing. It was all pro-Israel. It was supposed to be an organization to look into the rights of Palestinians. But more to the shock value of her probably 8 hours of interviews, I listened to 1 hour, and he said her husband is an existentialist and a cold-blooded murderer. Gave an example of a murder that her husband shared with her. In Israel, there were black operations going on, or Marines. What do you call them? I can't think of it. But the same kind as Jesse Ventura, where Green Beret, you know, they were staying at a school, at a college, I believe, these black ops people, and her husband wanted them to be there. But the guy in charge, even with power over her husband, said, no, I do not want these Marines who, you know, with their behavior among these really young people, I think they should be staying in a different location, not in some kind of dorm or whatever. You know, they might be kind of rowdy and ruckus, and because of that, her husband simply killed that person. And, you know, at that high level, big deal. You know, it's unbelievable. Just in cold blood, without even a thought, killed this man because of this disagreement. So, it's an upside down world, but like I say, there's you have faith in humanity, like Chris Hedges. When you do good, when you stand by truth and reality, and you fight and stick with it, and you don't give up on it and say, well, I know what I know, and that's it. I'm not looking any further. To have an open mind, you know, it spread. It has influence. Every action every individual takes, you know, in the direction to help save this planet works. It does spread. Spot fires of awareness. And I'll close with that. You can create a critical mass, and that will happen. All right.
Amen.
So, thank you.
No, I was just going. I just want to add a couple of things, man, that I found that was really interesting. That one thing about when you look at the 501c3, you can't teach everything you want to teach. You know, you can't preach everything you want to preach because of the lawsuits that will ensue. And it takes a lot of courage to opt out of the 501c3, and you are legally bound by the 501c3 if you haven't renewed your status in the 501c3. So that there in itself will get you in trouble. What do you mean? You can't teach against homosexuality. That's against the law. No, you can't teach against that. You can't teach against the ruling government. You know, your ruling president that's in power. You know, things of that nature. It can cause a lot of problems. And if they really want to get nasty about it, they can snatch all the tax exemption from you, hold you accountable because they say you forfeited your right by teaching against the things that you agreed that you wouldn't. Therefore, they put you in a situation that they can lock you up and put you in jail or in prison. So it's a really touchy situation when you allow yourself to become under subjection of the 501c3, and a lot of us don't realize you don't even need a 501c3 to function as a church, to be known as a non-for-profit. Because the church is already separated by church and state, by the law, by the founding forefathers. So you don't need a 501c3 unless you're looking for tax breaks, you know, or a little special amenities, you know. But aside from that, no. No. So that's a bold move on any institution that is 501c3 bound, so a not for profit. So, amen. That's a we.
Yeah, I wanted to spend time looking into it, but I, you know, just doing research on what these instructions are. But you're telling me right there, Brother Job. I appreciate that. It's interesting to hear from your experience what you know. So,
yeah, it's a dangerous thing. It's very dangerous.
Yeah, and
it's
again,
not what we think it is.
Yeah, and one interesting thing I can leave a picture is I thought this was so well put on YouTube, and I wish I knew how to do YouTube videos someday, maybe when if I ever get a chance to retire. But Greta Thunberg is sitting with Jane Goodall, almost sitting in her lap. Jane Goodall was the famous gorilla woman, or the ape woman, who, you know, did these groundbreaking studies on biology of our creatures, of apes. And she became an internationally famous, acclaimed biologist. And, of course, she's in favor of saving the planet. So there's another brand right there of those two sitting together, and it's called greenwashing. Now, that's going to pull people in. Everybody knows Jane Goodall and now Greta Thunberg. That's attractive. So people want to become a part of that, well-meaning people. But in the other picture of those same two, they have in the background Fourth Industrial Revolution, and then they have some kind of energy company using that same picture. In other words, the promotion of 5G. So isn't that a great example of how, you know, the private world, you know, it's not even a government anymore. It's more like a fascist world that we're in, because with private power so extreme, able to hijack everything, we're at this critical juncture of becoming authoritarian, and what's the word I'm looking for? The singularity, all tech, you know. But look what our technological tools have done. They pretty much enslaved us. They're destroying the planet so fast. So I'm not against technology. The technology that measured the snow out in Minnesota, that's fantastic. The technology of the internet, the ability to what we're doing right now is a great thing. But, you know, where's the balance? 5G is way out off the guardrails. It's just backwards, just like nuclear technology. But with that, I got to get going to supper.
All right. Well, you have a blessed day, and thanks for sharing. And I wanted to pick your brain on all these cyclones we've been having this past year, but I guess we can touch bases on the next time you're here.
Yeah, we'll talk about. Yeah, I've just heard bits and pieces in the news about weather whack-a-mole. It's just ongoing, and of course, it's going to be more extreme as the climate crisis is tightening its noose, unfortunately. So when will we all wake up and stop climate engineering as the biggest hole in the bottom of the boat, in my opinion, my humble opinion?
Sounds good.
And that's the beginning. You know, it's the fossil fuel, everything. But to me, this is the big one, because there's not one penny that needs to be spent, a gallon of fuel a second, spraying poison over the land, air, and water. And that's a simple solution. Just stop it. But how exciting it is to spread the word, too, that to, you know, face people and see what they say and get a dialogue going. Plant the seeds.
Well, hey, Rob, thank you for taking the time out. And once again, we want to thank you again, Rob Christensen. And you just got to listen to Invisible Secrets and Invisible Powers with our brother, Rob Christensen. And you need to sit back and really take in the things that this man is bringing forward. We are in those days and times, and the thing that the fathers allow him to pick out is actually written. So, with that being said, we want to thank each and every last one of you for your time. And as we say here at the Sounds of Living Waters, do what?
Read your Bible.
Read your Bibles, people. Time appointed. Shalom.
Shalom.
Sounds of the Living Water Radio Show. Sounds of the Living Water. Sounds of the Living Water. Sounds of the Living Water Radio Show. Teach the Bible from Genesis to Revelation. Preach the gospel unto the scattered nations. So many people are lost, it's time to be awakened. Come out of this world, it's ran by Satan. Through the Most High's laws, flee from things pagan. Understanding the word of Yah is really breathtaking. Under His love and covering is so amazing. Thank you each day, so now let's praise Him. Do things in unity, you and me. You want to know what we're talking about? Come and see. It's time to be deeply rooted up like a tree. You want the truth, it will set you free.
Sounds of the Living Water. Sounds of the Living Water. Sounds of the Living Water Radio Show. Sounds of the Living Water. Sounds of the Living Water. Sounds of the Living Water Radio Show. Sounds of the Living Water. Sounds of the Living Water. Sounds of the Living Water Radio Show. Sounds of the Living Water. Sounds of the Living Water. Sounds of the Living Water Radio Show.